What in God's name do you need to solve it for except to kill someone?
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
News on News with Mark Latham.
Mark Latham from One Nation joins me this afternoon. Hello, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. Always good to talk to you.
Been an interesting week for you, I would say. It's all started, I think it was on Monday. Mark Latham, it says here, one of the many news stories, Mark, it says you were ousted as leader of the party in New South Wales. You said you'd been removed as state leader without consultation or due process. Now, what we want to do is give you the opportunity to tell us exactly what happened and why it happened and where you're going from here.
Well, it's an unprecedented Queensland One Nation takeover of New South Wales. It's supposed to be on the basis of electoral performance, but in New South Wales we've done a lot better than the Queensland results that they've had, and also the Senate result, where Senator Hanson headed up the One Nation campaign last year, and you know, most notably we had to deal with the debacle of ghost candidates. So I don't think on the basis of performance you can say that you need to have the New South Wales branch of One Nation run by Queenslanders. We are the largest parliamentary group for One Nation in the country, myself, Rod Roberts and Tanya Mihalik. And in terms of leadership, well, Brent, it's political common sense that the leader of a political party is determined by their parliamentary colleagues. You know, in our parliament, Chris Minns, Mark Speakman, leaders of the Labor Party and the Liberal Party, they're not determined by Queenslanders, they're determined by their colleagues elected to sit in Macquarie Street. Mm-hmm. And after the last election, we had a discussion about it, and Tanya Mihalik and Rod Roberts agreed that I should continue on as the leader, and that's what I intend to do.
So, Pauline Hanson, with her involvement from the Queensland side of things, because it is called Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party, so it gives one the impression that Pauline Hanson's at the head and she calls all the shots. That's not the case, you're saying?
Well, I think in a parliamentary group of three, you know, it's good to have a leader. It's no big deal in the New South Wales Parliament. I don't get extra money for it. It's not really mentioned in the chamber. But a group of three would normally have someone who's the leader, and the three of them would work that out themselves. So that's all we're trying to do, common practice in a parliamentary setting. And there's no need for this Queensland takeover of One Nation. It's unnecessary. What's the basis of it?
You say that you'd been removed as state leader without consultation or due process. Is there a process that needs to be undertaken for you to be removed from the leadership of One Nation in New South Wales?
Well, the only process is for my colleagues Rod Roberts and Tanya Mihalik to decide that one of them should be the leader instead of me.
Right.
And I wasn't told about this in any official way. I was sent an email that others had received saying this was now the case. So that's the lack of consultation. But why would Queensland One Nation think they've got the right to make a determination about the leadership of the New South Wales One Nation three parliamentarians when, you know, we've been elected to make that judgment ourselves?
Has the relationship between you and Pauline Hanson broken down since the tweet directed at the Sydney MP?
Well, you see, one of the things in politics, Brent, is that the easiest thing to do is not interfere in other people's business. And in the 5 years that I've been leader of New South Wales One Nation, I haven't interfered in any of the One Nation issues in Canberra. And why would I? Senator Hanson and Roberts are down there elected to look after that, just as we're elected to look after New South Wales business. So the easiest thing to do in politics is not to interfere. And it's regrettable that Senator Hanson has decided to interfere in New South Wales. We've now got Queenslanders and Tasmanians sitting on our state executive. Really? Is that the sort of autonomy that the biggest state in the Commonwealth should have? Of course not. So, yeah, it's unnecessary. It was without consultation or due process, and hopefully it'll be reversed.
There have been allegations made this week that you requested by from One Nation, the Queensland One Nation, or from Pauline Hanson, that your legal bills to defend yourself in this legal action at the moment in New South Wales be paid for by One Nation. Is there any fact in that?
Well, I wanted to know what the party could do for me. And I had a fundraising appeal that we wanted to email out to our members in One Nation if they could assist me. And Hanson intervened to say, no, that won't happen. But at the same time, Hanson, who's got millions of dollars of legal bills, has had all hers paid for by One Nation. And I think you'll find that's an absolute reality. So why am I any different? Why would One Nation in Queensland be siding with Greenwich and his backers from the Climate 200 group, the Climate 200 people who were supposed to be our enemies, are funding the campaign against me, and I haven't received any support from my own party, not even being allowed to put out an email to our supporters saying, would you like voluntarily to assist Mark's campaign and fight off the climate change people?
You said you hope this can be sorted out this week. What's the end game for you?
Well, Parliament sits next week, and there's no change in the leadership of our parliamentary group, and for us it's business as usual. Just because other people want to interfere in New South Wales affairs doesn't mean that we give it a lot of credence or we're going to be dancing to that tune. So we've got important parliamentary work to do next week, and that's what we intend to do on behalf of the people who elected us.
Do you see it getting to the stage where One Nation in New South Wales no longer has anything to do with Pauline Hanson's One Nation?
Well, a political party in the Australian system at state level normally works on a federated basis, that the members of the Parliamentary Labor Party in New South Wales have made Chris Minns their leader. In the Liberal Party, it's Mark Speakman. You don't see Peter Dutton saying, I'm taking over the New South Wales Liberal Party. You don't see Albanese saying, I'll take over the New South Wales Labor Party. So normally, people are allowed to get on with their business. And as I say, our electoral results recently have been stronger than those in Queensland for One Nation. We're the largest parliamentary grouping for One Nation in the country. There was no need to intervene. We'd had an election review ourselves, and Senator Hanson was briefed on that. So, you know, it's always best in politics not to interfere in other people's business where you don't have to.
When was the last time you actually spoke with Pauline Hanson?
I think I spoke to her earlier this year about related matters. And during the election campaign, there was a dialogue. So, and there'd been an attempted interference in a pre-selection matter late last year that was a distraction from our campaign that we had to deal with. So there was a conversation at that stage.
Look, because of you, I firmly believe that One Nation in New South Wales is in the position in the upper house that it is in because simply of you and your hard work. Yes, you've got your other members of One Nation as well, but it's because of what Mark Latham has done, the groundwork that Mark Latham has done, that you are now in that position. If that be the case, and it can't be sorted out between One Nation nationally, One Nation Queensland, One Nation New South Wales, is there a possibility that Mark Latham could go out with the other two One Nation candidates and start his own party?
Well, no, I'm not starting my own party, and this is all hypothetical, but I can say that when I started 5 years ago, we had no one from One Nation in the New South Wales Parliament. We've now got three. We'd like more, of course, but three is a decent grouping in the upper house. And let's not forget that Pauline Hanson herself once contested the New South Wales Legislative Council and couldn't get elected. So I think when you start with none and you end up with three in a five-year period and you're hoping to build on that, I don't see the need for another state to take over your political party and your state branch.
So at this stage, I can still introduce you when you come onto the program as the leader of One Nation in New South Wales, Mark Latham.
Well, if you ask Rod Roberts and Tanya Mihalik, my parliamentary colleagues who make these decisions, then yes, they would say that's appropriate.
Okay. Thank you for that. Let's move on. Let's talk about the Labor National Conference. I see that Anthony Albanese is up there. It's rah, rah, rah. It's running down the corridor. It's high-fiving everybody, all these sort of things. I mean, these national conferences, Mark, does anything ever really come out of them, or is it just a rah, rah, rah for the party involved?
Well, it's a bit of jostling by the factions. The left-wing faction, which seems to have the numbers these days, has put two items on the agenda, a profit super tax in Australia. It's a tax super profits, big companies that make a lot of money. They want extra taxation, which is always the left-wing agenda. And I understand there'll be a debate about AUKUS, the security arrangement we have with the United Kingdom and the United States, which, you know, is not just the left wing of the Labor Party, Paul Keating, put out very strong views against AUKUS. So that could be an interesting debate, whether or not Albanese from the Labor Party conference has his national security strategy endorsed. But normally you'd expect, having won an election last year, the Prime Minister would carry the day and wouldn't be rolled by the conference. So to that extent, the jostling is a bit of window dressing, it's a bit of byplay, if you like, and yeah, you're probably not expecting a lot of substance to come out of the conference, because Albanese inside the Labor Party at the moment, this side of the Voice referendum anyway, is insurmountable.
Let's talk about the Voice if we can. Look, in the last 24 hours, 48 hours, some information that has come out as a result of a guy in Melbourne called Neil Mitchell interviewing the Prime Minister is just, it beggars belief to me. It's just unbelievable. I've got some audio here from Professor Megan Davis, and she has basically, now Megan Davis is part of the Yes campaign. Megan Davis was part of the people that were put together to basically put together The Voice. So she is in the Yes corner, and she has actually come out and said that you should read more than just the front page of the Uluru Statement from the Heart, you should read the entire document. So this flies in the face of what Anthony Albanese has been going around the country saying, and that is holding up the A4 page for everybody to see. It's just a one-page document. I got a little bit of audio here of Megan Davis.
Many people don't know is 18 pages long. It's not just the one-page invitation to the Australian people. It also includes what we call our story, which is an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history of Australia. And it's unfortunately one of the parts of the Uluru Statement that is not often read and overlooked. So those 18 pages include our story, so our history of our people, and also a few pages, about four, on the reform. Why do we want a voice? What will a voice do? So I urge everybody, if they do have the opportunity, to look at the Referendum Council report and read that whole document, which we call the Uluru Statement from the Heart.
Read the whole document, which we call the Uluru Statement from the Heart. That's from Professor Megan Davis. Now, she is saying it's more than just an A4 page, and she's imploring people to read the whole document. Neil Mitchell, a commentator on Melbourne Radio, was interviewing the Prime Minister the other day. I think this was on Monday, and he was asking the Prime Minister about, had he read the Uluru Statement from the Heart?
Look, I think that some people in the No campaign, and I include Peter Dutton in this, are saying things that they know are not true.
Peter Dutton's lying about the referendum.
Peter Dutton knows full well that a voice will not have a say in where the submarines from AUKUS will go. He knows full well that they're not going to have the impact that they say they were. He knows. He authorised this week. They know the Uluru Statement from the Heart is one page. Is one page, not hundreds of pages.
But what are the other 25 pages? I've read them. What are they?
What they are is a record of meetings. Some of them, they're records of the big lead up that happened in the lead up to, ironically, the lead up to the Uluru Statement from the Heart.
Do you agree with most of what is said in those 25 pages?
I haven't read it.
You haven't read it?
There's 120 pages. Why would I? I know what the conclusion is. The Uluru Statement from the Heart is one page. That's the conclusion.
Honestly, Mark, it beggars belief. He was asked, you know, about the other 25 pages, and he said, well, he answered what was on the other 25 pages, but in the same answer he said he'd not read them. So how can you read a document or not read a document and still know what that document contains?
Well, it's something you'd hear in a third world country, isn't it? It's just incredible to think that he's not only in a position where he hasn't read the full document, he's going to put the Australian people through the process of a referendum on something that is a flimsy one page at the front of the document, and the rest of it the Prime Minister hasn't even bothered to read it. Wouldn't you think, to justify a referendum, you'd be across all the detail, all the meetings, all the processes, all the demands of the Uluru Statement, and you would do that by reading, whether it's the 18 pages that Megan Davis talks about or the 120 that Albanese referenced, it's just amazing that the Prime Minister hasn't gone to the trouble of reading the full document, and he went out and made an election promise and is now putting us through a very divisive referendum.
I've had people send me emails this afternoon saying that they don't believe the Prime Minister. They think that the Prime Minister has read the full document, but he doesn't want to admit it because of what's contained in the full document when you read it.
Well, he must be pretty lazy if he hasn't read it, and it's pretty reckless to have a referendum change the Australian Constitution on the basis of one page without reading the other 120. And none of this is a surprise. I mean, at the time it was developed, the Uluru Statement was a really big deal. It was a lengthy document, and it contained things that naturally are worrying, that they're going to have a truth commission. You know, this Orwellian notion of rewriting Australian history, that there's a demand for reparations, for compensation, for things that happened hundreds of years ago. The treaty arrangements are open-ended. What will the treaty actually involve? Why do we need a treaty? So it's more than some consultative committee with people like Noel Pearson and Marsha Langton sitting in Canberra as the voice. The full document shows that there's a platform there for fundamentally changing Australian policy and the Australian way of life.
Yeah, one of the emailers this afternoon said he hasn't even read it and yet sits in front of all of us and blatantly lies that this is not about treaty, this is not about sovereignty, this is not about reparations, and this is not about self-governance. That's what the next 25 pages are all about, if you sit down and read the document, Mark.
Yeah, absolutely. The Indigenous leaders, and it's, you know, always the same group, they're not from a disadvantaged background or disadvantaged circumstances. They're people who are part of government bodies and mainly living off public money, academics and the like, who gathered at Ayers Rock, Uluru. They weren't there for a haircut. They weren't there just for, you know, a cup of tea. They were there to develop a very serious document with serious changes to thrust upon the Australian people. That's why the document's so long. That's why the document's so dangerous. And that's why in the referendum, people should vote no.
Mark, an external recruiter, thought the newly hired boss of Transport for New South Wales was not experienced enough for the almost $600,000 a year job. This is what government documents revealing. And at one stage there, when they had a conversation, they were talking to him, they thought he'd applied for the ICAC position. My goodness me, what a mess this has been. And apparently they got $120,000 for trying to find a candidate for this position.
Well, it's remarkable that Labor, having made such a fuss about the John Barilaro appointment as a trade commissioner in New York, saying that no minister should ever interfere in the independent process to interview and vet and recommend a person for this kind of position, that the Transport Minister, Joe Halen, has interfered in the determination of the new Transport Secretary in New South Wales. I mean, it's available to a minister to say, well, we're not going to have recruiters involved and independent process. There's someone that I like for the job and I'm appointing them. And that's what Education Minister Prue Carr did for Murat Dizdar, the new head of the Education Department. I think it's a very poor appointment myself, but she just said, he's my pick and he's got the job. So it's available to do that, and, you know, there's no controversy linked to it. But once you set up this independent process, spend a lot of money on consultants, recruitment firm to have a look at these people, then you've got to let the full process play out rather than sort of rig it for the benefit of Josh Murray in this case, where we find out that the recruitment agency, the experts who were brought in, said that he wasn't qualified and it'd be a high-risk appointment, but they went ahead anyway. So it seems to me a case of, didn't they learn anything from their own rhetoric about Barilaro, and now this is likely to be referred to an upper house committee to go through more detail as to what went on.
Just quickly, I've only got about 60 seconds left, but sadly the Matildas were defeated last night. The Poms beat us 3-1, but my goodness me, they went down gallant in defeat, and what a wonderful, wonderful job they've done in reference to the promotion of women's sport in this country.
Yeah, to get this far, to do Australia proud, to get to the semi-finals is a great achievement, but watching the game there last night, you know, the English team were a lot classier, you know, they marked a lot tighter in the box. Our defenders gave the English strikers a lot of room, and Sam Kerr had that wonderful goal. We're back in the game at 1-1, but, you know, it was a breakaway from midfield, and that really was the only way in which Australia was going to score. So they've got a platform there, I think, to bring in younger and better players in the future, develop the game. They've got a huge boost from this World Cup and all the support they've received right around the country. So you can only conclude that women's soccer or football in Australia has a very good future.
Fantastic. As always, we thank you for taking the time to talk to us. We enjoy it each and every week. Have a good week. We look forward to talking to you next Thursday.
Thanks, Brent.
Cheers. Okay, Mark. Bye-bye.